Well, hi there. Yeah, it's me again.
I know. I just put one out yesterday.
I know. Isn't this awesome? It's so good. Now, I see, look, this is what's happened. It's the day after the Canadian National Podcast Day, and I'm stoked. Stoked to sit down and actually do another podcast. Well, you see, I'm not actually going to do a full other new podcast right now. Because over the last little while, I've been doing a lot of recording actually as I drive to work. And I got to come in now and apologize for the terrible sound that happens later in this episode. But this is one recording that I made back on November the 4th. It looks like I actually started recording at 8:59 in the morning. I was on my way into work. 8:59? That must have been 7:59. I don't think I set my clock right on this thing, because that would mean I was really late for work. But anyway, I was on my way to work, and I felt the need to talk to you, just like I do now. And I'm going to play that for you now. And I get a little heated. I get a little upset. But I think it's just how I feel. Maybe it was more the way I was feeling on the day. I don't know. I probably still feel the same way too. I just finished listening to it. And I think I make sense. And I don't know. It gets a bit heavy. But I try to end on a light note. So I think I'm just going to let it go. This thing's going to run about probably 52 minutes. And I'm not even going to put any music in. So if you're looking for music, forget it. You're not going to get any music in this episode. Well, maybe except for this. Welcome to episode 33 of the Slug is Doug podcast. I'm Doug, also known as Slug. And here I am, driving to work, talking about guns.
That down, if not off. Yes, the familiar sounds of being in the Mini. Driving over bumpy roads. Bumpity bump 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 bump. The sounds of, you know, this car used to be really, really quiet. It used to be a very quiet car every time we went over bumps and stuff like that, but it's now getting on to 6 years old. 2005, and it's starting to get some squeaks and some pops and bips and bloops and bleers, rattles and such. But still, I like the car. Still good fun. Love the Mini. So what's new with you? Really? That's interesting. It's very interesting. But enough about you. How about more about me? It is now the it's Friday, November the 3rd? 4th. 4th. It's been an interesting week. I think the last time I talked to you was maybe last Friday? Maybe last Thursday? And I was in the process of getting several sets. Well, three. Four sets ready to shoot beginning on Monday. And, I left work on Friday at around 6 or 7 o'clock. I guess it's 7 o'clock. I left the Hearn Generating Station. And it had been a long day, long busy day. Work wasn't as progressing as quickly as I had hoped. But, you know, things are happening. I had confidence that by Monday evening, when we were to start filming, everything would be done, ready, good to go. You see, we had two crews working 12-hour shifts. So that means between Friday evening when I left, when the night crew was coming on, and between Monday morning, when the shooting crew would be coming on at nighttime, we would have basically 5 days of manpower work. That's a long time in the movie business. Five days, you can get a lot done. The unfortunate thing is that working down at this location, everything seems to take at least twice, if not three times, as long to complete any sort of task. There's several hurdles. I think I've already talked about this, but the hurdles are, you know, it's a location in the first place. Then there's power, light, temperature, and just the sheer size of this location. Now, I don't know if any of you out there have ever, if you even know what this place, the Hearn Generating Station, is, but it used to be a coal-fired generating station here in Toronto, and it's massive. It is huge. We were just using one little tiny corner of it, and to get from end to end, it is well over 800 feet. 800 feet, that's long. And when you're walking back and forth, back and forth, back and forth all day, plus going up three flights of stairs, three stories, it's a lot of difficulty. Now, I'm sure you're thinking, oh, well, 800 feet, that's nothing, Doug. Well, guess what? The ground's not flat. It's not even. This is a place that was actually under demolition when they decided, I don't know, at some point to stop. And there's like stuff all over the ground. There's holes in the actual ground. We had to fill in holes. We had to put down gravel. We had to have, you know, basically tons, literally, tons of scrap steel removed from the ground, the walls, the ceilings, let alone concrete. Tons of concrete removed as well. Just broken up pieces of concrete and rebar. So let's just say it took a long time, and I think that there was some misjudgment in terms of the amount of time required to get these things ready, especially in terms of the amount of work that we needed to do. I think there was the two things, the amount of time and the amount of work, and I think that there was one faction that had an idea of the amount of time that we had, and there was another faction that had the idea of the amount of work, and the two of them did not talk. And it became a time crunch. Anyway, so I left on Friday and things were looking, they were looking okay. It was going to be tight, the guys were going to be angry and upset, and I was actually expecting to maybe work on the weekend, but apparently the approval wouldn't come down for it. You see, I have to be approved for weekend work because it's overtime. So, while I was happy that I got to spend time with my lovely wife and daughter, I wasn't so happy in that the stress was still building inside of me, the wonder as to whether or not things were going smoothly and whether we were going to be okay. We had a relatively simple set that was supposed to shoot on Monday, And I was pretty confident that that was going to get done, no problem. I mean, it was simple. It was walls. It was some paintwork. The only thing that was really of any concern was an enormous sculpture that was being done, fashioned out of foam, and then it was going to be covered in plaster and hung up in the air. And it was a big sculpture. I mean, it was 24 foot in diameter, which means it's big. So my worry was that that wasn't going to get done. But you know what? In the end, it got done, and it looked fantastic. I wish I could put up photos. I can't. I'm sorry. But maybe someday you will get to see them after the movie comes out. What else? So, where was I? Sorry for the sniffles if I'm sniffling. I'll get to that. So when I left on Friday, I was sniffling. Actually, I was feeling a little bit of a sore throat coming on, and sort of a dryness behind the back of my nose. And I was thinking, well, this is just from being in the cold all day and being in a building where there was actually a lot of internal combustion engines running. So I was breathing in a lot of exhaust fumes all day, which can't be good for you in the first place. But it's a very large space, but after a while, you actually start to notice that the exhaust fumes were building. And I think as we got closer and closer to the actual shoot day and needing to get things finished, more and more engines were getting fired up. There was three... I think they're called Tele... Oh, what are they called? They're Tele... Telereaches or something like that. What it looks like, it's a really cool machine. It's basically a big four-wheel drive forklift. Telehandler is what it's called. And what it is it's basically a pallet handler or forklift with the forks on it. And so it lifts things, basically meant to lift things on pallets. And then the arm that lifts it is it's telescoping, thus telehandler. But the thing looks awesome. It's super low to the ground, so that it has a low center of gravity. The footprint of the wheels is wide and long, so it's nice and stable. And it's got this like beefy cage on top that the guy sits in, and these like forks, this arm that is connected at the back, these forks that go out the front, and it just looks mean. Like it looks angry. It looks like a battle robot or a battle machine, right? You know, it's really cool looking. I think I took a picture. I'll put that up maybe. And if you look closely, you might be able to see a bit of the set in the background. But like it's pretty incredible. And we had, I think, three or four of those things running at the same time inside this building. Plus, what else do we have? Oh, there was like a whole bunch of like little personal generators, all running gasoline engines. There was propane-fueled lifts, either scissor lifts or something that we call a... oh, man. It's a boom, basically. It's a bucket. It's a bucket on a boom. Oh, so I know. You're screaming it. You're screaming it right now. You're telling me what the name of it is. I hear you. Well, what's that? Can you say it a little bit louder? Louder, please. No? No, I'm not. Sorry, still don't hear you. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. It's a bucket on a boom, and it's powered as well by I believe they are they battery? No, I think some of them are gas, like it's a propane gas. So anyway, so every crew that comes in to do work, construction, paint, rigging, electrics, blah blah blah, they all have stuff that has to go up high, that has to be moved, stuff that's heavy. So everybody brings in their own, basically their own craning equipment. Zoom boom is what it's called, I think. So they're all running it, and so the closer we get, the more crews that are in there, there's more people, more stuff that needs to be done. it was like you could not walk around in that place without running into some form of internal combustion engine. And there was actually a safety guy on set at one point saying, I think that the levels of CO2 in here, or at least exhaust fumes, might be a little high. And once he mentioned that, I could actually really smell it. And basically, a lot of the a lot of that could have been dealt with by just getting some power run. And for some reason, that wasn't done. So I think that also slowed things down. It was just lack of power. Lack of light was another thing. Anyway, I left on Friday evening feeling funny. And all weekend I spent with my wife and daughter. But I started to really feel awful. And come Monday morning, I was feeding my daughter and getting ready to go into work. And I was just, I was broke out into a sweat and was had the shakes and I was feeling awful. So anyway, I called in sick and spent 2 days at home trying to shake this thing. And it was a good 2 days spent at home. Dealt with the illness, and now it's just kind of a little bit of sinus congestion that I think is starting to go away. But what that meant was it was another two days away from the work, and another 2 days of me worrying, and the odd report coming in of something that's going on down at set, and things that are going underway, and it ends out that things were okay on Monday for shoot. Everything was done and it looked fine. Although I did make a mistake. But it was easily handled. I probably shouldn't go into what the mistake is. Let's just say it has to do with 1961 and Khrushchev. Okay? And the renaming of Stalingrad. Apparently, when I said that in this job we get to learn all sorts of things in history and about places and architecture and things like that, I should have read a little bit deeper into the renaming of Stalingrad. That's about all I can say. It wasn't major; it was just small. So then Wednesday came, and I was feeling a bit better, and Wednesday night we were going to be shooting the sort of main, major brunt of the work, and the guys were getting ready. The set was done, more or less. I mean, it wasn't done to absolute perfection. It could have used another couple days of work to make it look really, 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 really good. As one of my art directors says, it would have been a 10 out of 10, as opposed to a 7 or an 8 out of 10. But given our budget, time, labor, and conditions, I think that's kind of what we got to aim for, is a 7 or an 8 out of 10. It'd be really great if we could get a 9. And I hope that's good enough for the director. I know that it doesn't feel good enough for me, but I think that we tend to focus pretty much on what it is that we're doing and not on what everybody else is doing. And it's amazing what lighting, framing, and just creative thought in terms of camera use and direction, what that can do for a set. And the great thing is that our director of photography on this show is really good. It's a 3D movie, so he knows what he's doing. He's done a couple of these things. I'm sure it'll look great. So it was good to return back and know that things got done, but it was also a little humbling to know that things also got done without me being there. You know, it's that feeling, well, maybe you're not that important. You're not irreplaceable. And I think I've known that all along. I am very much replaceable. I'm not just a warm body in a seat, but I'm just a step above that. And so, here we are, Friday. In there, we celebrated my wife's birthday. And me being the excellent husband that I am, and slightly selfish, I went out and I got her an iPad for her birthday. And I gotta tell you, I have been resisting the whole iPhone, iPad thing for, well, ever since the first iPhone came out. And I think it's because I knew exactly how I would react upon seeing one of these devices and playing with them. I mean, using them. One. They're amazing. These things are incredible. The user experience is amazing. And, you know, it worries me. It worries me that it's going to turn me into a Mac guy. And not that I don't like Macs. I love Macs. I learned on a Mac. But you gotta think about the price of these things. And, you know, for what I'm doing too, I need a PC. I hate to say it. AutoCAD works best on a PC right now. Give it a couple years. I'll give it a couple years and I'll talk to you later about that. But I suppose there must be some Mac programs that work well for CAD. I know Vectorworks is something that works nicely, but I know AutoCAD, and apparently it's now available for the Mac, but I'm not sure how good it is. I'll tell you one thing that I've noticed is that everybody in the office that's using a Mac has had a problem in terms of printing or compatibility with some other software or driver or whatever. And it's a real shame, because these are the people that would convince me. These are the things that would convince me to get one of these things. But if I'm going to be using it in various different places, using different networks, different network storage devices, different network printers, I can't get one of these things, because look at the hassles that these things, these software updates, especially the operating system updates, has created for everybody in the office. Now, albeit you could just stick with your simple old operating system. Get the computer, get it set up, don't change anything, don't download anything, keep the software as it is. But then you don't get to experience the sort of magic of the advancing the advancing technology, the new applications that are there to supposedly help you, you know. And that's part of this whole geek world that I love, is that all these wonderful gadgets, apps, I hate that word, apps. I gotta get an app. You know what apps are? That's a short for appetizer. Yeah. So I'm going to the app store. What are you going to get? Pigs in a blanket? Let's just call them applications, okay? Anyway. Oh no, we can't call them applications, because that's what it is in Windows. Anyway. Anyway, I love the iPad. Long and short, I love the iPad. It's so cool. I installed Dropbox on the iPad. So my wife's got a Dropbox folder on her computer, her PC. I installed another program called, I refuse to call it app. Another program called Plain Text. Which it just does, basically creates a text file. So you just type in, and it syncs with Dropbox, so that when my wife wants to look at that guy, just ran a red, oh no, he didn't run a red light. Never mind. So that when my wife wants to then take that text that she's thought of, maybe for a test or something like that, she can just bring it into the program of her choice on her laptop or on her desktop, format it for her test. Whatever, or letter, or whatever it is that she needs. So she doesn't have to spend time thinking about formatting while she's composing, right? While she's writing. She can focus on writing the content, and then focus on later doing all the other stuff, which is the fun stuff, which is the formatting, making it look good. So hopefully she can figure that out. I mean, she's still a little hesitant as to how it is that she's going to use it. She's still learning it. It's kind of maybe not the best time to have her learning it. She's just got to do report cards, so she's a little busy with that. But I think as I learn more about it, there's more ways, more things that I'll be able to show her of what she can do with it, and how it can actually make her life a little bit easier. I also installed OmniFocus for her so that she can keep track of all of the things that she needs to do, keep organized, and we'll see if she likes it. I mean, it was an expensive application, for sure. It was almost $40. But, apparently OmniFocus is like the program to use for keeping yourself organized. Anyway, you don't care about that, do you? Do you really care about that minutia? What can I give you? Why do you tune in? Why do you download this every week? What do you want to hear? Do you want to hear me talk about my life? Do you want to hear me talk about work? Am I really that interesting? I cannot be that interesting. Really? I'll tell you one thing that I was thinking about last night, and I wanted to turn the recorder on at one point. It was as I was driving home, and I heard on the radio that there had been a shooting outside of a school up on Jane and Driftwood. That area. If you're not from Toronto or you don't know, that's not a very nice area of town. I mean, it's, I'm sure everybody's heard of Jane and Finch. It's kind of the same area, and it gets a lot of, it just has such a bad reputation, and I think that, I don't know if the reputation if the reputation is deserved, like if it's come from the actions and the things that have actually happened there, or if it's that the bad reputation has perpetuated the bad things and actions that are happening there. You know what I'm saying? Do I make sense? You know, it's like a chicken or the egg thing first. What came first, the bad rep or the bad rep? You know what I'm saying? Hold on, I'm going to have some coffee here. My Tim Hortons mug full of coffee from home. We do a nice mix of coffee. We get a chocolate raspberry coffee from Loblaws, actually from the Value Mart. We grind it ourselves at the grocery store there, and then I mix that in with Van Hout. It's a Mexican coffee. So it's not overly chocolate raspberry flavor. Like those flavor coffees can sometimes be a little bit too, I guess the word is flavorful, and I use flavorful in air quotes. It can be too overpowering, but I really like the hint of the flavor, right? That's why we like certain different wines, is the hint of the flavor of whatever it is that we're tasting. The hint of berries, the hint of lemon, the hint of honey, the hint of cherry, whatever it is. That's why we like those. So why, when we have a flavored coffee, does it have to taste like a soft drink? Anyway, so there you go. There's that coffee. Now, what was I talking about? Oh, yes. I have a little bit more. So I was driving home last night, and the news comes on the CBC, as it does, seems like every half hour. You get a little tired of the news. And It gets you down. It can really get you down. And I think the Scarborough dude was talking about this on the last podcast, on his last podcast, 391, 392, or something like that. And it can really get you down. You know, we have very little news coming towards us about the good things that are happening in the world. It seems like every 5 minutes on the CBC we are hearing about Greece and how they're basically bringing the economy of the world down. They're ruining it for everyone. We hear about troubles in Afghanistan, another soldier being killed, or a new bomb going off, or troubles in Libya, story about Muammar Gaddafi being killed, and, you know, all this downer news, right? We hear little, very little about, you know, somebody who did something good for humanity and really inspired others to do something. You know, like the Terry Foxes of the world, or, you know, where are those people these days? We don't hear enough about them. And so last night, I broke. I couldn't believe it. I was in the car and they were telling the story about this 19-year-old out in front of a public school who was across the street, and another guy, whoever it is, whoever he was, came up to him, shot him what, from witnesses, said sounds like the guy let off several gunshots, shooting this kid in the stomach. And then two 14-year-old girls appeared in front of the school behind the shooter, the other side of the street, for God's sake. He turned around and shot at them, hit one of them in the ankle. Now, this, of course, is all witness reports and news reports. I, you know, maybe this is not the true, real story. But what really, really, really angered me about this is, and I screamed out loud. I screamed, how dare you bring that to my fucking city? How dare you bring that violence to my city, to my world? And I was really upset. Where are all these handguns coming from? Why, for God's sake, are people, children, kids, being shot in the street? Where are they learning that when problems escalate to a certain point, that the best thing to do is to shoot somebody? Where? Where is this coming from? I cannot understand how at any point anybody can say the only solution to this problem that I have is to go and shoot that person on the street, and anybody around me who sees it is also going to get shot. And there's still people out there that have problems with a gun registry. You want to know why a gun registry is good? Because making it extra difficult for people to get guns may just help to get rid of them in the first place. Now, I know everybody says, oh, well, they'll just, you know, people want guns, they'll just get them illegally. Well, you know what? If there is a flow of legal guns into this, into the country, then that means that there's guns in the country. I don't care whether they've been gotten illegally or legally, I don't want them here. Get rid of them! So then I started thinking about, well, what does the justice system do about all of these illegal handguns? They're coming into our country, or maybe they're not even coming into the country. Maybe they're originating here. I don't know. Do we have handgun manufacturers here? We mustn't. All this shit must come from somewhere. So, when there is a gun crime, I want to know, and I know that there is somebody out there that's listening right now that has the answer for this. When a criminal is prosecuted for a gun crime in this country, is there anything that is done to find out where that gun came from? To find out the lineage of that gun? You know, why not offer a little something to the guy who committed the gun crime? You know, whether it's like silk sheets in his jail cell or something like that. Offer him a little something to give you some information about where he got that fucking gun. I'm sorry to use the language, but it really upsets me that these people, oh, that they use these things. Where did it come from? It had to come from someone. You had to know that. I don't care whether it was somebody on the street corner that had a trench coat and said, psst, you want a gun? Because if you can find that guy, you can find out where that guy got that gun. And if you can find out where that guy got that gun from, then maybe you can keep tracing where it is that these things are coming in. Now, the other thing that needs to be done about this is the real problem. The situation that these people are put in that makes their life so desperate that they can't actually reach that switch point where their mind and their soul and their body and their brain tells them, my only escape is to kill somebody. Poverty. Poverty. That's a problem. I don't know what you're saying to yourself right now. Hey, Doug. You just bought your wife an iPad for her birthday. And you have the balls to talk about the problem of poverty in this country, in this world, in this city, when you are not doing anything to help people in need in this city. And you're right. I gotta do something about it. I have to make a commitment to myself and to whoever, I guess, to this city, to this society, that somehow I'm gonna help improve the lives of people who have basically no lives. I need to do something to help people who are suffering from poverty. You know, back when I was 20 something or even younger, I would have thought, these people, they're in poverty. You know, it's their own fault. It's their own damn fault they're poor, that they're, you know, unemployed, that they're out on the street. I didn't know. I didn't realize. I did not realize how tough this world can be. So when I hear about increased jail times for criminals in our world, I think that is not the solution to our problems. It's a temporary solution, I guess. I don't know. It might not even be that. Gets those guys off the street for a while, keeps them from doing any more crimes, perhaps, for a few more months. But you know, just like water in a river, it just moves down. The next guy comes along. Creates a vacuum. One criminal goes to jail, another one just comes out because things have not changed in the, I don't know, what do you want to call it? The cocoon of wherever it is that criminals are grown. It's not changed. You haven't changed anything. You've just harvested the criminal. Think of it as a vegetable, okay? Like, the society that the criminal grows up in, whatever, all the factors that have created a criminal in this world. Society, all of that. Think of it as growing a seed. You've got a baby born into poverty. He's fed and watered. Whatever, warmed with the... yeah, I don't know, strike your analogies here. You know, the water is something, the sun is something else, the seed grows in this terrible situation, or man, let's just call it a weed, really, you know? It's not even a fruit, it's not a vegetable. I don't know, my analogy's falling apart here. You know what I'm getting at. And it's, I guess, I, you know, at least with fruit, you have to take care of it. You have to protect a fruit or a vegetable in through its life while it's growing to harvest it, right? A weed, you don't have to do anything, right? So that's more like what it is. Because you pull one and the next one comes up. Right away. So we're just basically pulling the weeds out of the ground, but we still have the fertile ground in which they've grown, and the seeds are already spread. It's already in there. The roots are deep. And you'll get more growing unless you can figure out what it is that is the problem to begin with. Just like a leaky roof. You don't fix a leaky roof by putting a bucket underneath it. How do you fix a leaky roof? You tear off the shingles, you find the problem, you patch it up. You replace the sheathing, you put new shingles, you put new flashing. If you're lying in bed and you have water dripping on your forehead, by moving to the other side of the bed, does not solve the problem of a leaky roof. What makes anybody think that just making criminals stay in jail for longer is going to fix that problem? It's not. We got to find the problem. And as far as I can tell, it's got to be the poverty. Anyway, I'm surely talking out of my ass. You're probably really bored of what it is that I'm saying. God knows how long I've been going on. God knows how long this podcast is. I don't even know if I put any music in yet. I know. I said that I complain too much. And I was already complaining about how we don't hear about the nice things. We don't hear about the good things on the radio. And here you are listening to me, and here I am telling you what the problems are, and you don't want to hear that, do you? This is just going to bring you down. So let me finish it off with this little story about Halloween. My daughter, she's only, 15 months old, maybe? And Halloween came around last Monday. And we dressed her up as a monkey. Yeah, it was so cute. She had a monkey costume that we bought for her at, I think it was probably Old Navy. They had a whole bunch of them. But since we call her monkey all the time, we decided we'd dress her up as a monkey. And it was a great costume. It had little furry brown legs, like pants that you put on that were like legs. And it had these little feet that sit over top of her shoes that make her look like she's got monkey feet. And then, this big monkey shirt that was padded so she makes her look extra fat, right? And there's a pocket on it. So there's a banana sticking out of it. So the monkey's got a banana, and then there's like a little tail that's sewn onto it, all curled up. And it was so cute. And she's got like a little hood that goes on, and it goes over top of her head, and it's got a picture of like, you know, it's got like the monkey eyes and monkey ears on it, and then a little monkey face. And she loved it. She just loved being in it. It was so funny, so cute. And, you know, we'd say, what does the monkey say? And she'd go, ooh, ah, ah. And it was great, really. So I took her out. Even though I was feeling really crappy, I took her out. And we walked down the driveway. And then on the sidewalk and up our neighbor's driveways on either side. And went up and tried to get her to say trick-or-treat, but she wouldn't say that. And tried to get her to say Happy Halloween. And while we got halfway, she was definitely able to say happy quite clearly. And Halloween kind of sounded like, Halloween? So, it was fun. It's probably the first time in years that I've actually been excited about Halloween. And I felt a little disappointed that we only got like probably 20 or 25 kids to our door the whole night. Unbelievable. We get, at our old place, we used to get hundreds. And I swear we got probably less than 30 kids. I bought several boxes of chocolate bars and Twizzlers and nibs and, you know, all that kind of licorice and candy stuff. I only opened two of them and didn't finish either of them. So my wife and I have lots of chocolate to eat. Perhaps we'll have some sort of, maybe we'll donate some to the food bank. I think that's probably the best idea. And I think that's what we should do. I mean, in light of what I was just talking about, I think, there we go. We'll give that candy to the food bank. That way some kids somewhere can have a little extra something in their lunch bag when they go off to lunch, off to school, a little treat for them, more than just peanut butter and Kraft dinner. So there we go. It was fun. It was great to see her in her costume, and great to see her smile and laugh and dance. And that night, I put her in her bathtub, and she was, she's so darling when she sits in her bathtub. And it's this small folding pink bathtub. It's made out of vinyl, and you open it up, and it's just big enough for her, right? And she gets a big smile on her face when she gets in there, and she makes the sign, the sign language sign for bath, which is closed fist, and you make like you're scrubbing your chest, right? And she does that every time we go take a bath. I say, what time is it? We're going for a bath. And she'll scrub. She'll make the sign. So she gets in there and she just, I don't know, I guess she just decided that night it was splash time. And my God, did she ever splash. She was splashing the water everywhere. She soaked me, absolutely drenched, like more than usual. And she was laughing and just having the best time. So there you go. There's I don't know who out there has bathed babies, has seen this. Hopefully, if you've got a memory of it in your head, it's reminded you of when you bathed your son or daughter, or it's reminded you of when you were young and you had baths and how much you enjoyed it. Because you got to think about those, some of those things every once in a while when you're just fed up and you wonder why. Why is this world so mean when there's this joy of children that all they want to do is splash. Anyway, I hope it didn't bore you. I hope it's a decent recording. I know it's probably a little difficult to hear me and listen to me when you got the sound of me driving in the background. I assure you, someday we will actually sit down in front of a microphone in my actual house. Silence in the background, and I will actually have something that I really want to say other than me just rambling as I drive to work. But for now, I just gotta keep going. I gotta keep doing this as I can, and I gotta do it when I can. And I also want to thank those of you who subscribe to the podcast and are regular downloaders. I thank you very much for doing so. Thank you for sticking around and listening. I'm glad you do. If you feel like commenting, please do. You can always comment at the blog, slugisdug.com. Comment on this episode or any other episodes, or you can just send me an email if you want, doug@slugisdug.com. I'll try to get back to you. And, I guess that's it. Thanks for listening. I will see you. Well, not see you. I won't see you. I don't actually see you while you're listening to this, so don't worry. You can drop your towel again. Loosen that bathrobe. I'll talk to you next time. Take care.